I'm going to ask you to live as if you have it already. I'm going to ask you to think, breathe, feel, intuit, and essence as long as if you already have it. Let me ask you a question. How many of you are doing what you would consider your life's goal or your life's purpose? Okay. Just hold your hands up for a second. Remind me what you do. So that's what you want to do in life. That's your life's goal, okay? And that's what you want to do. You live it, love it, and breathe it, right? Extend it and love it and breathe it. Yes. What did you do? You teach and you love teaching. Is your hand up?
Yes. Healing.
You're healing. You're a healer. Yes.
Designer.
You're a designer and you like designing. And you like doing that. That's your life's goal. You don't want to do anything else.
No.
That's part of it, okay? Hand up in the middle here, yoga teacher.
I'm teaching, but I'm still learning. Nothing
is
more.
There's more. Okay. And John, the restaurant tour.
Yes.
And you like that?
Yes.
Good, okay. So maybe 20% of this room's got a hand up. There is 80% of you here that are not doing what you want to do, okay? So we're going to ask you to come out of this room tonight and agree to do what you want to do. There are a myriad of different stories inside each one of you. Honorable, holy, heroic, wonderful stories that explain why you ain't doing what you want to do. But they're all garbage. All of them. They're all garbage. They all deal with a whole bunch of nonsense that has got nothing to do with it. We live in a dimension where we're free to be anything we want to be. Anything. And we do not have to ask anybody's permission. And what people think about that is none of our business. None at all. And so I'm going to ask you today to decide to go do what you want to do, because you only have a few days left. And then wouldn't it be a drag to come to the earth plane and futz around for 65 years and forget to go be whatever it is you came to do? That'd be a hell of a drag. You look back and say, my God, what happened to me? You know, I want to be a painter. I wind up driving a stupid train up and down this track. Why did I do it? Then you begin to look at security, fear. People stuck you in it. You got it. You didn't. You never got out of it. You got that. You never felt that there was a path out for you. Each one of you has a path. And it's important. It's important. A person that is not aware drifts through life Monday to Monday. You know, they just drift through. The years click by. Endlessly. Just click, click, click. And in the end, they die. Once you become aware, every second means something. Let me ask you a question. If I took you now, clunk, into the spirit world, okay, we leave your body there because we can't jack it with us. Have you done all the things you want to do? Did you see all of the countries that you wanted to see? Did you read the best books that's ever been written? Did you see the best films? Did you meet with the most interesting people? Did you make a love to enough of them? You know, what didn't you get? Did you like it? Did you have fun? Would you say you've had fun? Would you say you've had fun? Okay, some of you yes, some of you no. Did you learn all you wanted to learn? No, right. So what we're looking at is, we're looking at making this day a threshold. Only a threshold of consciousness, but living in a sea of consciousness, a threshold of consciousness is concrete. A threshold where you decide now today what it is you want to do, and in the case of the artist, becoming a greater artist because you express more of a life force, and in the case of the rest of you who didn't put up your hands to say that you're doing what you want to do, you're making up your mind that you're going to do it. That you grant yourself permission to go be it. And when you get to that point where you're doing what you want to do, you will exude the life force in every pore. It'll become power to you. Let's look down this list a little more. You could say to me, well, Stuart, what has all this got to do with money? But do you see how we're moving towards it? Mm-hmm. We're moving towards the fact that once your energy, the folk will show up. When they show up, you bill them. Okay? I mean, that is the motto of this seminal enterprise of mine. Raise your energy, the folks show up, and you bill them. We've looked at expectancy. We've looked at you're never, for 1 year from today, you're never going to charge anybody anything less than full price. You're not going to do anything for nothing for 1 year just to balance all the garbage that's gone on for the last 40 years. You're going to come out of loving the people. Now let me show you how that's done. Loving the People says, I totally respect your reality, your consciousness, the race that you come from, the religion, what you believe, your age, your sex, your condition. I accept it unequivocally, okay? I know that you've come to me because I have a product that you're interested in, okay? Let's say that's your violence, okay? I will honor you and serve you long enough for us to do this deal. Once we do this deal, I am not responsible for whether your life falls apart or not. All I am is doing my best while you're with me. I'm honored by the entry of your energy pattern to my energy pattern, okay? I will serve you. The way that I will serve you is this. I will come out of loving you. Loving is not I love you. Love is understanding you're infinite and I'm infinite, okay? And understanding that within that infinity, I have to subjugate my ego for yours long enough for this deal to take place. So if I come to you, you come to me as a healer, and I go, come here and be healed, touch the end of my jeans, it'll all be all right, you know? I'm lording it over you. I'm ego-tripping it over you. And interestingly enough, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that are involved in the New Age and alternative thought, alternative healing, some of the biggest ego trips in the world is the New Age, is it not? They're revolting, aren't they? I mean, they're totally revolting. And isn't it funny that our end of the scale, the New Age, is where all of these ego trips are? Okay, so let's watch this deal. Let's say I'm a vitamin salesman. You come to me, you want to buy some vitamins. I get underneath you, okay, literally underneath you, ego-wise. I do not talk to you about my life or what I feel or my business. I talk to you about your life. How do you feel? Your business. How do you feel? What can I do for you? What vitamins worked last time? Which ones didn't? How would you like? What's it like in Melbourne? What do you feel like? Is it raining? How's your family? How's the cat? You know, you subjugate your ego for their ego. How many times have you been into a store, in a restaurant, in a bank, and you want something and you have to stand there while the clerk or the waitress or the person there has to tell you their life story? And you intuitively, subliminally do not feel served. Because even though it might be a vaguely interesting story, you did not get in your car and negotiate 17 blocks of Melbourne in the rush hour to stand there to find out that she's having her period and her boyfriend's run away to Nigeria. Because it's got nothing to do with you. You honor her decision and her physicalness and whatever, but it's nothing to do with you. What you want to know is, does the money market rate on this market bill pay as much as that one? That's what you asked her. So what happens is, as humans, because we want acceptance and because we come out of worrying, we have to tell the people our story. When you feel settled within yourself, you don't have to tell them. Now, if you're not talking about yourself, that gives you a chance to listen about them. And when you listen to people, very soon in the conversation, they will tell you what they need. They might not directly say, I need this, but they will incline it to you bit by bit. So then you give them what they need. And maybe what they need is a ride to the station and they don't need the vitamins. So you can look at it and you can say, you haven't got time for the vitamins, have you? And they say, well, no, to tell you the truth, I really haven't. I really need a ride to the station. You say, fine, let me take it to the station. And you honor whatever they need. Okay, the next time they need some vitamins, where are they going to go? Hey, I went round there. I went round for the vitamins. I didn't have time to choose the vitamins, but she was neat. She got in her car. She drove me to the station. You see? And what happens is that usually what happens is you get involved with ego meets ego, and nobody feels satisfied. And often, especially in a society like yours that is inherited from Britain, okay, from England, where in England they have a special type of restriction and manipulation called class, okay? All right, here in this country, there's a little bit of that class system stuff whereby if a person is serving you, they are less class than you. You know, like the waiter is working class, or the man driving the tram is of some kind of species of God force that's less than best. Okay? And then what happens is you get his less than best ego, or his less than best self-image, and he says, well, I'm only a working man. Okay? Which, presumably, that gives him some kind of special reason to be an idiot, okay? I'm only a working man. That gives me a special right to be weak. This gives me a special right to be slovenly, to not do a good job, because I'm only a working man. And somehow the customer is like some kind of aristocrat, okay, in the mind of the people. Now, this is a true thing that goes on all the time, you know? So then you've got this battle of the ego where the tram driver is mad angry because you're the aristocrat. And you don't know that he's thinking like that, because you don't feel aristocratic. You're just a working man yourself. You want to go home. But there's an antagonism that builds up between the customer and the server. When you serve somebody, you honor them. In the Tao, they worship water because they say that water is pure and it accepts the lowest place. And by being in the lowest place, you are actually in the highest place. Why? Because you're so far from ego when you're down there. And when you go out to make money in the world, you will have to sell yourself. There's no way around it. There's no other way of making money without selling yourself. Whether you sell them your ability to cook, or whether you sell them your ability to lay bricks, or whether you sell them your ability to paint, or you sell them whatever you sell them. When you sell them, you have to get underneath them. When you get underneath them, they feel supported. When they feel supported, they feel safe. Because for 5 minutes, they feel less scared. And basically, human beings, they don't admit it, but if you take a man in the street and you talk to him for 10 minutes, okay, he is basically terrified out of his wits. Absolutely, unmitigatingly terrified. He's scared of walking up the street. He's scared of falling sick. He's scared of not having enough. He's scared of not being accepted. He's scared of not being loved. He's terrified of the society falling apart. He's worried about getting AIDS and all sorts of stuff. Okay? And so when he comes into your establishment, you give him respite if you can play this one thing with him of getting underneath him. So we're going to look at moving within yourself away from fear. And then when you deal with the people, moving away from fear. And when he says to you, I'm scared, you don't get involved. You don't go, I know. Oh, yes, oh, it's so hard. Oh, I know. Do you get faulty tires here?
Yeah.
Have you heard her do that? The wife, John Cleese's wife, there was one segment in one of the faulty tires, they're my favorite. But that's all she said in the whole conversation. Yeah, did you see that? But she has this like 5 minute conversation, all she says is, I know. You don't get involved in that. What you do is, a person comes in and says, I'm sick. And what you say, isn't it a beautiful day? They come in and say, I feel insecure. And you say, look at the strength of that tree. You know, they say the economy's falling down a pan. You say, 500,000 more people have got jobs this month. And you find some fact that tells them about a reality that's safe. Because the reality that they're describing to you that is not safe, that they're scared of, is no less real than your reality. When they say there's no more jobs, you say, my Uncle Harry just got hired at twice the wages for half the work. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. Because they're living... It doesn't. They're living a fantasy lie. They're living a lie as well. Because they're saying there's not enough to go around, and that's not the truth. And you're saying, yes, there is. My Uncle Harry's just been out at twice the wages for half the work. So what happens is you begin to create a dimension around you, and that is irresistibly alluring to people that are scared out of their brains. Because if you were splashing around in the water and a boat has sunk and there was a geezer there sort of wearing one of those sort of little hats that the lifeguards wear, swimming past, do you think you might ask him for a ride? You know, would you say, excuse me, but would you mind holding me up? Of course you would. And when they intuit, a person can look at you and they can receive a couple 300,000 subliminal messages instantly. The way you look, the purity of your eyes, the color of your hair, how you dress, how you feel, the way you stand, the color of your skin, the accent, the feeling, the mode, the energy that is transmitted that's invisible, but they touches them and they get an instant printout. And if you're strong and you vote for the other, you vote for the right-hand side and not the left here, if you are strong, it's an automatic feeling. She's strong. So they relax. When they relax, it's so simple to sell them on the idea. You don't ever have to sell them. Yes?
What happens when they all run away?
Who runs away?
The art class. Wednesday night I was teaching after your lecture Tuesday. And I said, who owns a tram? Don't worry about the tram. Who owns a train? And they all left early.
Why?
Poor darling. They probably thought we can't handle them.
Well, when they leave, that's beautiful because that stops you having to bother with them. I think that sounds perfect. You tell them just the right thing. I would start every class with it. I would let them be. To tell you the truth, it's interesting. That's an interesting thing because one of the things that we're going to be looking at, ladies and gentlemen, is loneliness. Then you will experience it. And some of you that have already worked upon your consciousness, upon transformation within you, have already inkling that loneliness. There's some heads nodding here, right? Right. There's a loneliness. Why? Because you can't split splash in the garbage with the rest of them. And there's a point in power
an empowerment where you have to continue to empower yourself. Like, what is going to keep you safe as you start moving faster and faster and faster? Nothing. All that's going to keep you safe is you constantly pulling from power from within you and exuding it, as it does now. That's all that keeps you safe. When you walk down the street, what stops you literally being imploded upon by every evil in Melbourne is the power you exude. A person that is attacked by the phantom rapist is just not exuding a lot of power. A person that is surrounded by malevolent, let's say, restrictive, difficult energy is not expressing enough life force to push it out. Right in this room, there are literally tens upon thousands, I believe, energies that are literally watching us, that have horrendousness coming out of the yin-yang. They're frightening. There are dimensions of intense ugliness, intense evil, and what keeps you safe is the power exuding from you. And what will keep you safe as you walk down the street is the fact that your power's there. And if I took you from Melbourne, Cliff, like this, and I blindfolded you, and I dropped you off somewhere, Czechoslovakia with $100, what would keep you safe? The power from within. And in any given situation, if you say to yourself, what will I do? You're engaging the intellect. What you do is you engage the intuition and feel out where the strongest path is. As we become more and more sensitive, we understand that we're moving in a sea of energy, and you just don't move into dimensions where there's trouble. And the dimensions have big signs on them. This is trouble. You know? Because evil people, people that make manipulation and restriction a part of their life, they exude it. They exude it. You can sniff it, touch it, taste it, smell it. It revolts you. And if you have a feeling like that, you are perfectly empowered and allowed to run. You know, if you're walking through the jungle and you hear a twig snap and his two eyes looking at it and they got fur around them, you're entitled to run. But what happens to human beings is we feel there's something wrong, we feel there's something wrong, and the intellect plows us in there anyway because we agreed to be there. If you agree to be at the station at 11 o'clock at night and you're walking along and there's something feeling something wrong, you don't go. He said, but I've got an obligation to Harry. I said, I'd meet him at 11. Forget it. You want to get strangled 10 blocks south of the station just to meet your obligation? No. So we're going to look now at developing a control of your life. First, understanding that you have the control. And then secondarily, developing a control of your life so that, and why is it important? So that as you go through the day, each and everything that you do endorses, sustains, and becomes an affirmation that you control yourself. If you allow each and everybody else to give you their time frame, to give you their thought forms, you had it. So when somebody says, will you meet with me at 9 o'clock, you make the decision. When somebody says, let's meet for lunch, you make the decision when and where. And begin to develop and practice controlling the situation. And begin to develop saying to people, no. Somebody says, will you come to lunch? No. A person that helped me recently, who's not in this room, good, helped me a lot. She picked me up. She drove 9 hours to get me to a gig and back. I stayed at her house. She cooked breakfast for me. All her kids helped me. She was an incredibly helpful person. She said to me, at the end of doing all of this help, Stuart, would you come to dinner next Thursday? And I said, oh. And she went, you know, and she was thinking, but I've helped you. I've driven you all over everywhere. I let you stay in our house. We all my kids got up and cooked you breakfast. Why won't you come to dinner? So when I felt her say that in her feelings, I said, because I don't like socializing in people's houses. I didn't go into explaining to her why, but basically speaking, I find socializing in people's houses very energy draining. You know, because there's a lot of obligation. You got to eat the food. You got to like the food. You got to tell them how neat the house is. You got to da 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 da. You're sitting there with an empty glass. You can't ask for another one. You know, there's all sorts of trips that you have to go through. I love socializing in restaurants. I have ate in probably 30,000 restaurants worldwide. I love it. You want to take me out, take me to a restaurant, no problem. But I don't go to people's houses. But you see, normally, each one of you perhaps would have said to that woman, I'll come. And you were to spend an evening doing something you didn't want to do just to keep her happy. Whereas I can keep her happy by saying, I won't do it. No. And as you begin to work with controlling, first of all, you've got your four hemispheres. Okay, let's put them up here so they're here for the day. Let us say this green circle is the totality of the you. Let's make the green circle black because the green pen's run out. Limited supply. Let us say this black circle is the totality of you, okay? This circle represents your hemisphere of influence. Within that circle is the physical hemisphere of influence, the emotional hemisphere of influence, your mental hemisphere of influence, and the totality of it is basically your metaphysical hemisphere of influence. Because your metaphysical hemisphere of influence is basically the sum total of these other parts of you, and then the metaphysics. In other words, if you have a very small physical hemisphere of influence, you'll more than likely have a very small metaphysical hemisphere of influence. If your hemisphere of influence emotionally is very little, your metaphysicalness will be little. If mentally your metaphysicalness is very restricted, if mentally your hemisphere of influence is very restricted, okay, then metaphysically you'll be very restricted. And the essence of being of you will be little. Okay. Your physical hemisphere of influence is basically the geographic area that you inhabit and your physical body and the sheer amount of physical people that you know. Okay? Now, if we understand that money is emotion, then we understand that only humans believe in it. Nothing else on the earth plane believes in it. You cannot get a tiger to jump through a hoop by giving it $100. It doesn't have that emotional frame of reference. You can dangle a stake on the other side of the hoop, but maybe the tiger will jump. But it's not a currency. Stake is fine for tiger, but dollar ain't. Okay? So your physical hemisphere of influence is very, very dependent upon how many people do you know. And we do not bother to go and meet the people because it takes effort and it takes... Get in the bloody thing, because that's where the people are. Your physical hemisphere of influence is also can be very restricted by a lack of mobility. Okay? If I say to you, will you travel 700 miles to do a deal by car, that's 14 hours of driving. If you say no, then let us look at why you won't do that. Now, you might say, well, you know, what's in the deal? But let us look at how much mobility we have. Let us look at, are you looking for money just from Melbourne, or are you looking for money from everywhere in the state, and then interstate, and then everywhere in the nation, and then there's 150 nations in the world, so what about the other 149? You know, and as you begin to expand your hemisphere of influence, you begin to see that there's a lot of places that money can come. And if you're in a job, that's 9 to 5. But what's going to happen from 5 round to 9 o'clock? You know, what stops you being in a job 9 to 5 and owning three 24-hour laundrettes that are cranking money all night? You can sleep and listen to the little coins going, You see, as you begin to stake it out, you can begin to create these little money machines. They don't have to be in Australia. They don't have to be in this town. They don't even have to be in this city. But they can be cranking out for you. And in our business, we have businesses more or less around the world. So if I have a nap for 6 hours, nothing stops. Like I'm sitting there snoozing in my little mountain house in Taos, and somebody somewhere is writing me a check. Maybe in a different language. But they write, you know, so... I'm not saying necessarily that you can, you know, that's what you would want to do anyway, or get into the business that we're in, but understanding that there's 24 hours in a day and there's 150 countries in the world and there's 4 billion people. Stand at a bus stop, and next time you go to a bus stop, watch the people and watch them as basically bank accounts, as pools of energy that are resources for you. And if you want to know where your resources are, stand in a crowded street and look at them. They all have a toothbrush. They've all got 6 pairs of socks. You know, most of them own a car. Most of them own clothes. You know, if any of them don't, stop and watch Earth. Are you? You know, they need things. They have emotional needs. And when you look at what they need, then you supply the need. It's as simple as that. And we go back to every transaction is basically an emotional transaction. Give me a coffee. I need a coffee. Fine, here's a coffee. How much? 90 cents. Here's 90 cents. It's so simple. So expanding the physical hemisphere, now we're going to look at expanding the emotional hemisphere. And the way you expand the emotional hemisphere is to get out of the emotion. is to feel good about yourself. Self-confidence, you cannot grant yourself self-confidence. You have to build it brick by brick and acknowledge yourself step by step. If you do a good job, you look at the wall and you say, this is beauty as far as the wall can go, and I built it. And you can drive your family past it and say, that's my wall. I built that wall. And you feel confident. You begin to work with like a joy of life. And here we come into another part of this left-hand side, right-hand side. We go from negative yearning to satisfaction. Okay? And in doing that, we expand the emotional hemisphere of influence. Negative yearning, I do not have to really basically explain to you what that is, but I will. It is basically that part of you that says, next year, someday, somewhere, it's all going to be all right. When I grow rich, it'll all be all right. When I get older, when I meet the perfect man, when I pull to me that wonderful woman that'll be with me, when the inflation gets less, when the government changes, when the union, negative yearning. Because there is only a perpetual now, negative yearning is putting into the universal law an energy pattern that it doesn't understand. The universal law does not understand next year. There's only perpetually the now. Let me show you. Okay, here we go. The ego, ladies and gentlemen, lives in the future and it lives in the past. The only place the ego doesn't want to be a part of is right now. Why? Because right now is reality. Right now is actually how much money do you have? Is how happy are you? It doesn't want to handle any of that. It doesn't want to really look at it at all. Okay? And too much of now really freaks it out. It'll start taking Valium, drinking itself stupid. Anything other than to look at now. And you look at people who don't want to look at now, and you look at people that are involved in abusive drug taking of drugs and so on. It's basically the inability of the ego to touch upon where they actually are. It lives in the past, and what it does to the past is this. The ego dry cleans the past. It does. It sends it to the dry cleaner. What it does is it takes all the past events, and it drops out these little spots coming out of the dirt, okay? It drops out all the dirt. All the stagnation, the manipulation, the evil, the uncomfortableness, the difficulties. Okay? And it says, those were the days, my friend. The golden years. We had such a great time. Do you remember when? Okay? So it likes that. It loves to do that. And it dry cleans the events and just gives you a phony vision of what used to be. Okay. The future, because of imagination, can be anything the ego likes. So it says, next year we will buy a boat and sail the seven seas. Next year we will have all of this abundance. Next year I'm going to marry. Next year I'm going to move and go to Bujumbura. Okay. The ego loves that stuff because it doesn't involve action. And the ego hates action. It hates having to actually do it. To live in the fantasy of doing it is extremely simple. To having to push that fantasy through consciousness, through the solidity or the coarseness of the physical plane and actually materialize it, is probably going to take effort, depending on how much power you have. And once it takes effort, effort is an anathema to ego. Yes, sir?
Well, how can you explain he's on an ego trip quite often in that expression?
He's on an ego trip?
Yeah.
Well, it's basically the person expresses this feeling of, you know, the feeling that they are. Well, I mean, it's all of those left brain sides. It's all of that stuff there that we're talking about. Is that what you're asking?
No, well, you were saying it doesn't involve action. Like,
oh, yes.
And now he's on an ego trip. Well, that must be...
Does an ego trip mean action to you?
Well, it must show out in some way when people pick it up.
I can't say that I really understand what the question is. I'm sorry. Yes.
I've got a feeling that that's the response people have when someone's doing what they like doing, and that's the label they do it.
Oh,
and
so you just, I see, yeah, so you cut it down by saying, oh, you must be on an ego trip.
But they just label it that way, and that's...
Listen, there are certain things that take ego to do them, you know? Like, you stand up in front of 500 people in the hall, and it's very hard not to engage the ego, because it's very hard not to come out of, like, personality. What we're looking at here, well, just follow me and see if by me talking, I've answered your question, because I'm not totally sure what the question was, but I think I know what it is, but if I don't, never mind. You got the answer already? Okay, here we go. All right, so let me just extrapolate on this point so we can close it out and have lunch. The ego does not really like the now. Understanding that we're always generalizing. There's never any cut or dry. It's not a religion. It's just here's some concepts that we can look at. It doesn't like the now. It loves the future because it can fantasize it and create it without any effort at all. You know? And it dry cleans the past. Okay? A person that is integrated, that is whole, that is dominating their reality, that is manipulating life into the position they want, lives in the present. Only. They can talk about the past. They can say, last year when I was in Marion Bad, this happened to me. They can say, you know, where you're going next month. But they're basically, their consciousness is settled in the present. And look at this. The power or the oscillation or the force of your consciousness is what gives you reality. The time lag between you conceiving a thought or feeling and it being presented in the physical plane is basically your metaphysical bank account. It's basically how much power you have. If a chunk of your power is dissipated into the future because you're directing your consciousness beyond yourself, what happens basically is you dissipate your ability to materialize it right now. Do you understand that? That is extremely important. Yes, sir?
One question. What happens until when your ego actually dies and the spirit's coming in?
Well, you'll have that feeling. Also, you'll have a feeling of rebellion. You'll have a feeling of rejection, and you will have a feeling of it becoming less. You'll have a feeling also of you being more and more a part of all things. Yeah. You feel yourself less separate and more whole.
And with manifestation, the greater amount of awareness and consciousness you can get in the reality now is when you really start to manifest.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so the whole point about living in the now is that it directs and hones your consciousness. People who are weak, who do not get what they want, who do not live reality the way they want to live it, are people who do not center their consciousness on what they want. They are someplace else. Now, it might be through the use of drugs, and they're wacko, and they're spaced out, and they do not have a consciousness that's creating anything. Or it could be because of some religious belief or philosophical belief that they feel they can't have it. Or it could be their life experience, you know, they tried, I invested in 1942 and it didn't work, and so I'm not going to do it ever again. You know, that kind of feeling. Or it is a person that is not right here, okay? And right here is terribly uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. Who wants to be right here? You know, we've got to be like someplace else. Next year, next month, when it all happens better. What we look at, follow me, we'll break for lunch in about 10 minutes. It's hard to stay with me, ladies and gentlemen. Let me take this hemisphere out of here for a second, so I've got more space on the board. Let us say that this square, or this oblong, is the parameters of your life, okay? Alright, to the right here, I've got a circle marked G and one marked F, and to the left here, I have a strip marked R. This strip is the reality that you're actually living in. It is, let's say, a railway line that you go down each day, okay? Over here, a long way from the railway line, is a circle marked G, and that is basically your goals, okay? It is your consciousness pushing energy out into your goals. And next to your goals, I've got an even larger circle marked F, which is the fantasy, okay? All right, because your goals and fantasies are never the same size. The fantasies are bigger. Okay? The goal's a little. Where you actually are is on the left-hand side of this map in this very narrow little track marked R for reality and R for restriction. Okay? When you push energy or consciousness into the track, okay, you can expand the track. When you put consciousness into the fantasies, you can do nothing to expand the track. And the energy goes to the fantasy and literally just drops out. Because it's like, it's a daydream. It does not, you're not honing or directing consciousness on the very next thing you want. Now, I'm not saying you cannot sit at the rock at the beach and watch a bird fly past and think about a neat time you had 10 years ago and where you might want to go. That's fine. But if you live in the fantasy and you don't live in the reality, what happens is the energy goes to the fantasy, not to your day-to-day life. And the only way to reach the goal, okay, which is somewhere between reality and fantasy, okay, is it not? All right, the only way to reach the goal is to reach it through the empowerment of your day-to-day. You cannot take a quantum leap and be at the goal. You can only go step by step by step to the goal. If you want to be a great violinist, you could fantasize playing at Carnegie Hall or playing in some great opera, you know, and there's the fantasy. What's the goal? Well, goal number one would be saving up enough money to get a violin. Okay, how do you get it? Well, then step by step, day by day, you put $10 away a day till you've got a violin. But what happens, ladies and gentlemen, is that the human condition, once they create a mindset that is restricting, once they take on the subconscious mind, the tribal, the Hindu, the Arab, the Jewish, the Sicilian, the Chinese, the French, whatever it is, the mindset, they live in these restricted tracks, and the only way that the person gets the release from this stagnation is by developing a way of fantasizing. A kind of mental masturbation to keep you from dying of boredom. Okay? What we ask you to do is to begin to put the consciousness right here. That does not mean that you do not create a future self. A future self is basically a feeling of empowerment of where you're going to be. But if you live out here in the fantasy section, there's no power in the reality and things don't change. And if you do, if tomorrow you do exactly the same as you've always done, what will you get? The same. Nothing will change. There's only one way for you to get more or better or faster is you've got to do something different. If you take on these concepts and nod your head and say, rah, rah, that was splendid, fantastic, go on, turn the telly on and do nothing, you have totally wasted your day. Okay? We are going to go into life tomorrow and we're going to expand our hemispheres of influence. We're going to detach from the emotion of the people and we're going to come out of a powerhouse of creativity that honors and endorses whatever it is you want to become.